Alaida, I understand that you work with modeling particular aspects of the sun. Tell us about that.
I am a solar physics modeler, and so what I study are the large structures that exist in the solar atmosphere and produce the solar wind. So I spend all of my time looking at computers, running simulations, and trying to understand how it is that the solar wind is actually escaping from the atmosphere of the sun and traveling out into interplanetary space.
What are some of the ways that you get the data that you need to create these models?
So through NASA missions like Parker Solar Probe, that is a mission that is flying the closest we've ever been to the sun. And so there are two types of measurements that Parker Solar Probe is taking. The first is in-situ measurements. So it's actually physically going there and sampling. And so we can use that data to then do a validity check on our models. And it also has a remote sensing instrument on it. WISPR is the white light telescope. And it is actually taking images of the solar wind as it's flying through the solar wind. And so both of those help inform, you know, how accurate our models are. We also use data from NASA coronagraphs, so missions like the STEREO mission. These are things that produce an artificial eclipse in space, and they actually let us see the streamer structure in the atmosphere of the sun, in the corona, and that helps inform what types of simulations we should set up to try and study.
So you mentioned streamers. So I know about CMEs and I know about solar flares, but I haven't heard of these streamers before. Tell me a little bit about what those are.
So streamers are the largest structure that exists in the solar atmosphere. So when you see a total solar eclipse, you are definitely going to see what we call a helmet streamer. These are these large, slightly candle-like shapes, but they're at the full scale of the sun. And they are pretty much always there. You also might see a pseudo-streamer, a little fake streamer, if you will. Yeah, these are much smaller, but they have the same type of structure. So you'll see a bright dome and then a streak, a stalk, sticking off into the solar wind. And those two types of structures are what we believe what produces the slow solar wind, which can be just as important as the fast solar wind for space weather effects.
That's interesting. I always think of the fast solar wind, like the big events that come from the sun. These slower solar winds, what's involved with them? Do they have a real impact on us?
They do. So the solar wind, we can kind of bin it into fast wind that comes from coronal holes. So these are the dark regions that you see in extreme ultraviolet on the surface of the sun. And there, the solar wind just streams right out into interplanetary space, and the acceleration mechanisms work on it right away, and it just speeds right up. The slow solar wind, we think, is coming from these streamer tips, which you'll get to see during the total solar eclipse. And these have a lot more fine scale structure in them. So you can kind of think of the slow solar wind as having little bubbles in it. And rather than, you know, a fast wind stream just blowing over the magnetosphere of Earth, you get these tiny little bubbles that impact it. And that has a really unique signature for Earth's magnetosphere and for space weather.
Yeah, it's interesting because that means that, you know, like the weather's not just the big event, it's sort of occurring all the time.
It's occurring the time, right? You want to understand what that baseline is and then how it differs when you get these large events that pass over it.
And I like the idea of solar bubbles, too. Yeah. I don't know if that means anything, but it's kind of cool.
We call them mesoscale structures, which is very exciting.
Bubbles, mesoscale structures. Okay, I'll think about those for a bit. But one of the things I'm wondering is, you're going to actually be present at the eclipse. You're going on the path. You're going to see it. Tell me a little bit about what you look for as a solar modeler when you see an eclipse in real life.
Yeah, so the really exciting thing about a total solar eclipse is this is the one chance that I get to see these structures with my own eye. So I spend all of my career looking at these structures in the computer, either looking at the data taken from satellites or looking at my computer simulation output. And it's really easy to kind of think of that as just a toy that exists in the computer. And then you walk outside and, oh yeah, the sun's in the sky, but you know, it's just always there.
And you don't want to look at it anyway,
right?
Outside.
Exactly.
Right?
But during a total solar eclipse, of course, you want to look at it, and you want you want to see what's there. And what's there are these streamer structures. And actually seeing them with your naked eye is a very human experience. Like, okay, this is really real. And it's always there, even when I can't look at it.
Yeah. And I imagine that's got to be pretty cool, too, because that's what you do all the time, to actually see it there in reality.
Yep.
It's kind of a big validation.
Exactly, yeah. That's the only time that that you get to actually see this thing that you spend so much effort trying to understand.
Now, do you fancy yourself ever becoming like an eclipse chaser so you can get sort of get that validation more and more often?
That would be fun. This will actually be my third total solar eclipse if the skies stay clear, so fingers crossed.
Interesting. I wonder what qualifies you for being an eclipse chaser. I mean, three eclipses.
Is three enough? I don't know.
We'll do some research on that. But that's awesome. And where are you going to be
I'm going to be in Dallas, Texas.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we hope that you have great weather. We hope you get to see it. And I'll be one behind you. I'll have seen two.
That's
so
great.
Hopefully, maybe you and I both can be eclipse chasers.
Absolutely, yeah.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We can stop, but my follow-up question is your modeling, your prediction, is it more like hurricane predictions? So
like are we going to get a big event? Is it going to come or not, you mean?
You know, when a hurricane's coming, they predict and you'll have like multiple different paths it could possibly come. Are you seeing like multiple different things that could possibly happen, and then something does happen and then now you change your models to reflect?
Well, so it's hard to really even get the level that you get with a hurricane prediction, because we don't have measurements on the backside of the sun, and the sun is rotating around.
Yes.
So unless like stereo happens to be in a unique position that helps us out, we don't know what's coming. So it's more like, oh, we see it and you have a couple days and you know we're gonna get a high speed stream or not. Like it's more binary than hurricanes, just because we don't have the data that we need to make those predictions.
Is that what you would prefer? If we had like multiple?
Absolutely. More data, better, yes. Yeah, so we call that 4 pi measurements, because the solid angle of the sun. So we want full 360 degrees and then also over the poles. And then we would be able to fully characterize everything. And the streamer structures are the kind of the global structure of the corona. And so what you see on one limb is being influenced by what's on the backside as well, because it's the whole sun structure. So it would really help in terms of figuring out where the helmet streamers are going to be, where the pseudo streamers are going to be.
And do you think it could get to that point where we're actually being able to see, like, okay.
Oh yeah, we need the missions to fly.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Okay. And then, okay, so if the missions do fly, you get all that data, What can we as humans get from that information?
Well, we would be able to predict CMEs with much finer accuracy, and we would be able to maybe even predict like the aurora to much finer accuracy. We'd be able to protect our satellites. So when you get these eruptions, then that can really hurt our satellites. So things like GPS, it can induce, you know, ground-induced currents, so things that affect our powers systems, power grid. And then also, you know, we just want to understand the environment that we live in, right? So especially, everyone always talks about like, oh, satellites, like killer electrons during a giant storm that would damage our satellites. But they're always up there and they're always flying through some layer of the ionosphere, which is being impacted by the solar wind every day. So like the slow wind, right, yeah. These little structures, they're having an impact on the upper atmosphere all the time. And our satellites are always in that. And so, you know, the better we are able to characterize that, the better we are able to take care of our satellites.
Yeah. So. And for our missions to Mars and beyond.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, human protection of human life,
right.
Yeah. I mean, so if we could get 4 pi observations of the sun, then we could have much better models that would predict what the solar wind is like anywhere in the solar system. So if, you know, astronauts going to Mars or the moon, right, we would be able to protect them. So, yeah.
Because with the satellites, would it be, is it possible that some of the impact that's taking place on satellites now could be impacting instruments and data gathering, so that you can maybe calibrate instruments more particularly if you knew what they were flying through more or is that too granular?
No, there is an aspect of that, right? All of our satellites and all of our science instruments are sending signals through this atmosphere all the time and being affected by it. So the more that we can understand what the atmosphere is and how it's impacting that, then yeah, the clearer signals we'll
and
get.
Put some filters on there. It's like when we cancel out audio, right? Yeah, it's fascinating. Well, do you want me to ask that question?
No.
It was just all so good. We feel like we get bonus because we have you as a captive audience.
We get to ask whatever we want.
We can ask all our super secret heliophysics questions that we've been dying to ask. That's awesome.